Welcome to ACE Podcasts. Thanks for tuning in as we elevate clinical endocrinology by taking deep dives into trends and topics that can help us improve our patient care and global health. Find the latest episodes on aace.com/podcasts. And now, let's meet the endocrine experts who will be talking with us today.
Hi, welcome to ACE Podcast. I'm Dr. Sina Jassim. I'm the editor-in-chief of ACE Clinical Case Report Journal, and I'm associate professor at Washington University in St. Louis. Today, we have the pleasure of hosting Dr. Leo Rangel to discuss his work on radiofrequency ablation in microscopic papillary thyroid cancer, and to discuss his case, radiofrequency ablation of papillary thyroid microcarcinoma. Dr. Rangel is a head and neck surgeon from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, and he's an international expert in minimally invasive procedures and thyroid tumors. Dr. Rangel, thank you for joining us today from Brazil.
Hi, Dr. Sina. It's a pleasure. Thanks for ACE for having me here. So I am a head and neck surgeon. I work in the State University of Rio de Janeiro. In the past 10 years, I mainly focus on thyroid, benign nodules, and thyroid cancer. So I mainly focus on minimally invasive treatments for those nodules, also endoscopic and robotic surgeries for thyroid and parathyroid. So my practice is pretty much thyroid and parathyroid, and now the radiofrequency and minimally invasive treatments took pretty much a lot of that practice. Thanks for having me.
Very interesting. I worked with you before in ACE guideline paper on minimally invasive procedures in thyroid nodule. And this case in particular is very important, and we wanted to highlight because it does talk about those minimally invasive procedure in microscopic, very low risk thyroid cancer. Those are the cases that sometimes we advocate either to minimal surgery or even no surgery at all, because the outcome is typically good. So I wanted to see now, in United States, minimally invasive procedures are becoming more widely used, and probably more for benign than for cancerous lesions. So can you tell us a little bit about the differences about the utility of those procedures when we're talking about benign versus cancer? And what is unique when we talk about radiofrequency, in particular when we talk about cancerous thyroid lesions?
Perfect. Well, we have two extremes of the pendulum. Now we have these minimally invasive procedures for benign nodules. And I would dare to say that for a euthyroid patient with a single benign nodule with aesthetic or compressive symptoms, I would dare to say that is the best treatment for that patient would be an ablative treatment. Minimally invasive, you preserve the thyroid, you preserve its function. That is the main issue that we got. So for benign nodules, I think it's pretty much settled. That is a great option. For malignant lesions, it is a little bit more complex, because for starters, we not only have papillary cancer, albeit it's the majority of the cases, it is not the single case. So, of course, those micropapillary cancers are really, let's say, benign in their way of progressing. But we have other subtypes, so we need to be aware. And another thing, we are talking about those low-risk patients. So that needs to be said beforehand. So we're not talking about taking care of those large tumors. We are talking about taking care of those 1 centimeters, maybe 1.5 in the future. But not only the size itself that matters, but also the location. It's the same thing as states. Location is the thing that drives us. So it's location, location, location. And the position nodule with the thyroid is what allows us to access that nodule entirely and take care of the full nodule. Different from a perspective of a benign nodule, that we are okay of leaving a rim of untreated tissue close to the nerve, close to the trachea, and we are going to reduce the nodule up to 90%, and it's going to be okay. And maybe we can address that nodule again in the future. But at treating cancer, we need to have some kind of assurance that that nodule will be completely taken care of. and hopefully it will disappear from the ultrasound. So that is our goal at this point. So we want that those nodules to disappear. And so any issues, so the main difference between those benign nodules and malignant nodules is the selection, case selections. The case of the patients that actually fit for minimally invasive treatments when they are malignant are quite few. It's not the majority of those cases at this point with the technology that we got. So that needs to be really rephrased. So there's a lot of things and that are changing, and they are going to change fast in the future because we open a box in the thyroid management that is going to be huge in the future. We are going to we foresee things that are going to really change our prospect.
Wonderful. And you are absolutely right. I think choosing the right patient would be very appropriate here. And part of our podcast today is to focus for our audience that not every patient is a suitable candidate for that. We're sometimes talking about the cases that observation is also an option, because these are typically very low-risk cancer. Dr. Rangel, you shared with us a very interesting case at our journal ACCR, and I kind of like you to summarize the highlight of this case. I noticed there's a specific patient selection for that patient who didn't really want surgery, but they wanted something to be done, so to speak. And there was something unique about the nodule size and location. And I wanted you to maybe spend more time about the images. I noticed the images were kind of concerning the first month after that. So how to think about that, how to expect the resolution moving forward, and how do we monitor these cases as endocrinologists?
Yes, we need to be familiarized with the changes. So the patient, first of all, it needs to be motivated to do something that is minimally invasive. So there is it's a distinct trace of personality that drives people not to run away from surgery into a minimally invasive procedure. Assumptions, especially people from where I come from. A lot of people, Brazil is a little bit mixed, but we have a lot of European people here in Brazil. So the acceptance of having cancer is really not very good. They heard that they have cancer. Generally, they want it out. But some patients are becoming more aware of the impact of the thyroid. And sometimes they will ponder the need for a thyroidectomy or not. More than another, in my office, my practice, I'm having more patients looking for this kind of option. So first of all, the patient needs to be motivated. The right motivation is the thyroid function preservation. That's where we really the patient. So once we get this patient motivated, we need to explain the patient that we are not removing the tumor. We are treating, we are destroying those cells. And we expect that those cells will be destroyed and that area that we ablated will be reabsorbed tissue, the body. And then we expect that that lesion will eventually disappear from the thyroid. For that, the nodule needs to be a little bit smaller, close to 1 centimeter. And so the patient will need to follow up. In that paper that we shared in the reports, we showed a nodule that was close to the capsule, not in the capsule. So it's still a low, it's a T1A, it's a 1 centimeter. We have a lot of margins that we can go through and treat. And the nodule is close to the anterior capsule of the thyroid. So it is away from here, away from the posterior capsule, and away from the recurrent laryngeal nerve. So there's plenty of space to treat and have a very decent margin to treat. And so in the first month follow-up, we have a huge area of ablation, of damaged tissue. So when the first time we get the patient back, we can infer that nodule actually got bigger. But actually, what we are seeing is edema and the margins that we so want that. So generally, after 3 months after the procedure, we get the nodule, the area treated, in the average, the same size the nodule before the treatment. So, and then from the third to 12 months, we see reduction, the sharp reduction in volume, and we expect that nodule to disappear in around 90 to 90% of the time. And the time And when we don't have those, there's a complete disappearance, we get a scar tissue in that area. Rare, we have some tumor left out. If so, if we still have vascularization, we suspect that the lesion is growing, we can re-biopsy it, we can treat it again, or we can do surgery and salvage surgery. Something that we need to address it, we need to think about it. It is going to be a role within active surveillance and radio frequency ablation. Maybe active surveillance can be a bridge between surgery and active and radio frequency ablation in sort of a way that we can really decide weigh it on how is going to be the biology of the tumor. For example, we can, for example, watch that tumor for a year, see if it's growing or something. So if the nodule is really, you know, it's a papillary cancer, it's not growing, is that micro PTC that we want it to be. So we're going to radio frequency. So within a year, we got a lymph node, we got the nodule actually. So maybe it's better to treat it. Or in the future, we can look into the molecular biology of that tumor and even decide some markers better do a surgery doing ablative technology, that technique. So I think it is going to be really interesting in the future to see how we're going to manage. But so far, we need to look for the right patient, right? So the patient needs to be into this. The patient needs to have a favorable, so not just the size, but the location of the nodule. When we need to remember that our beloved thyroid, it is a, like, it's not like an H form. It is like a tube. It's by the isthmus. So if the nodule is closer to the superior pole, it's going to have less tissue around that nodule if it is located in this inferior pole of the thyroid. So there is less tissue around that nodule. So of course, there is less tissue to get as margin. So yeah. The position, superior pole, inferior pole, closer to the chia, closer to the nerve, we need to address and be familiarized ultrasound in order to refer the patient, to treat that patient, and to follow the patient also. So the endocrinologists that need to be very skilled in the ultrasound to refer the patient to treat those patients.
What I'm hearing, Dr. Rangel, that we need the right patient, the patient who doesn't necessarily need surgery, but they want something to be done. We need to pick the right nodule. We don't want to pick something that's very dangerous, that could compromise or have more side effect or adverse event to the patient. And we need to have a proper monitoring and follow-up. Whoever the person follow-up, the endocrinologist, they have to have a good sonographic skills to be familiar with the changes of these nodules after ablation and how to monitor. Dr. Rangel, in a recent paper was published in a sister journal on thyroid, looking at the shift in practice in thyroid cancer management, low-risk thyroid cancer management in the United States, minimally invasive procedure remained to be not widely used. And so that kind of lead me to the question, what do you think about the challenges or barriers to implementing those procedures more in our part of the world, and how can clinicians do better and be better educated and informed about offering those options to their patients? I think at this phase, we want to have more education about who is the right candidate for this procedure and who's not. We are talking about thyroid cancer here. So I think that this is very important, how to refer those patients, but also how to make that practice more popular and more, what are these challenges that we're facing here?
Well, the greatest challenge that we have, fortunately, that those patients are not very common. So thank God our patients do very well, and most of those do not recur. But once they do, I think those minimally invasive therapies can play a really important role. First, the 2015 ATA guideline already put the thermal ablation techniques for recurrences as an option. And why we do not use them so much? So in a scenario of a recurrence, a structural burden, for those patients, one would immediately think about using those drugs that we have at our disposal now. We have the lorlatinib, all those TKIs, lorlatinib, and lenvatinib, and those are good options that can be used in those situations. But we know that they have some contraindications, they have some minor and major adverse side effects, and also, and most importantly, they have a span of time that they work and they can be used, and then we need to change for a new drug. So in those scenarios, if you see a patient that has a low burden, low volume disease, well-localized recurrent disease, we need to think, or even metastatic, but with a major disease that can be approached by surgery or sometimes with a minimally invasive therapy that will be the first lesion to give the patient symptoms, may be a better option than starting drugs up front. So it is a minimally invasive treatment. It is way cheaper than using those drugs from the beginning and may be less morbid for the patient as well. So we need to think outside of the box, and especially to discuss this within the tumor board and have everybody put their minds together and decide what can be best for the patient and let the patient decide what is going to be the best option for him at that point. So I think we need to think a little bit more about those minimally invasive options regarding the recurrences. So far, we use them for small volume lymph nodes. Well, there is two options. We can treat those metastatic recurrences in the curative intent or the palliative intent. So when we try to cure them, those patients, the patient wouldn't have any distant or structural metastasis aside those small lymph nodes, or for at least 5 lymph nodes or less. And then we can really tackle those lymph nodes and we can follow the thyroglobulin. And the other instance, the palliative scenario, the patient would have a distant metastasis or several metastases and one single metastasis that will eventually cause patients problems. For example, recurrence close to the larynx, a large mass in the neck. So the patient wouldn't want another surgery or would like to avoid a very morbid surgery, for example, like a total laryngectomy or something like that. And we could try to do these small treatments, minimally invasive treatments, to avoid those big surgeries that we used to do it. It is our option. Maybe it is going to be something that we're going to see more in the future. Again, the barriers. One, we need to be very familiarized with surgery complications, and this would be a tumor board decision, not a single physician decision, because we need to balance the indications and the options and have the patients decide, for example, is going to be the surgery a better option or not.
Absolutely, and I agree 100% with you on that. It should always be a multidisciplinary discussion. There is more people at stakehold here. The patient preferences, of course, the main thing, but then I think there should be a surgical input, an endocrinologist input, a radiology input, and so on and so forth before moving forward. But we're talking at using more of these procedures, maybe in either very low-risk thyroid cancer or more advanced or local recurrence when surgery is not an option or the patient is not a surgical candidate. Dr. Rangel, are there any additional thoughts that you would like to share with us regarding this case or the practice of RFA in low-risk thyroid cancer?
Well, I foresee the future allowing us to treat larger tumors, make the procedure safer. We are going to have new technologies, new ablation options, nerve monitoring during the procedure so we can treat lesions closer to the nerve. We are going to have a probably augmented reality and margin analysis software that will allow us to track those treatment that we are doing, and we will probably do a better job with the technology that we're just doing now, looking at the ultrasound. So all this new technology will allow us to treat larger tumors, take care of patients that now wouldn't be very advisable. So in the future, I see that this technology can help more patients. Also, I think this is a field that needs a little bit of dedication of the physician. So since the options and the variables are so great and the treatment options are increasingly jumping in our scenarios, we need to have a dedicated practice for those to use these technologies. So to be updated to the new technologies, to the new softwares, to the new indications. It's not like we used to have 50 years ago that we did thyroidectomies and for honor for so forth. And it was pretty much the same surgery. Now we have radio frequency, we have robotic surgery, we have endoscopic surgery, we have active surveillance, we have molecular testing. So there's so much that can change, and there is the variables are so great for the patients and for the treatments that finding one good answer for that patient really takes a lot of time. And that is going to be the reality in the future. So I think it is going to be really very interesting and very joyful to treat and have a thyroid practice in the future.
Absolutely. And this is really fascinating and growing field, and we have to stay tuned at it. And like any other procedure, the more experience we have in these procedures, the less likely the risk of complications or even recurrence in some cases. So we'll stay more tuned for more and more advances in the field. And we love to hear from you, Dr. Rangel. I want to thank you again for joining us today to share your own experience with us from Brazil. To learn more about this fascinating and educational case or other cases, or you submit your own interesting case or visual vignette, please visit www.ace.clinicalcasereport.com. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Rangel, and have a great day.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to another great ACE podcast. Join us for another episode at aace.com/podcasts and help us in our mission to elevate clinical endocrinology. Together, we are ACE.